So, in this passage that Ron read, in verse 21, it says, Elijah came near to all the people and said, How long will you hesitate between two opinions? If the Lord is your God, follow him, but if Baal, follow him. But the people did not answer him a word. So, just to review the background of what's going on here, in chapter 17 of 1 Kings, God calls Elijah to be a prophet, and he told Elijah to go tell Ahab in verse 1 of chapter 17, As the Lord, the God of Israel, lives, before whom I stand, surely there shall be neither dew nor rain these years, except by my word. And so after 3 years, God tells Elijah, go tell Ahab that I am going to send rain. Now, of course, the reason that there had been a drought for 3 years was because Ahab chose to do evil things and lead the Israelites, the people of Israel, in doing evil things. Now here's Elijah. He had called Ahab, his 850 false prophets, and all the people of Israel together on Mount Carmel. What's the question that he asks them? He asks them, how long will you hesitate between two opinions? Or you could say, how long will you limp between two opinions? Of course, what did the people do? They just stood there silent. They did not even have an answer for Elijah. So these people, we might refer to them as fence straddlers, people who like to sit on the fence. They thought it had been working well for them to believe in the true God, as well as a false god. So basically they were straddling the fence, wanting to accept both ideas. And I find it very interesting that the way it's worded here is that Elijah says, how long will you limp between two opinions? Now, of course, we know that God's side was not an opinion, it was the truth. But for the people that Elijah was talking to, they just saw it as two different opinions, that they could accept both. Because what's an opinion? If you talk about truth, what's the opposite of truth? The opposite of truth must be false. So the people did not want to accept that one was truth and the other was false. They liked playing both sides. So if we talk about opinions, if we say things like, well, we just have differing opinions, then you can sort of reconcile yourself with both ideas. Now, of course, with fence straddlers, you understand what I'm talking about here is that these are people who like to accept both ideas at once, maybe look on both favorably, maybe play both sides. Sometimes maybe they're people pleasers wanting to please both sides. Maybe some of the people of Israel knew what God had done for them and they didn't want to stop believing in God, and yet they wanted to please their king who had led them astray to worship these false gods. Of course, we have other words for fence straddlers. In the world of romance, we call them two-timers. Guy that has two girlfriends because he's not sure which one he wants to be with long term and which one's going to work out. So he thinks, I like them both, so I'm just going to be with them both until I decide which one's better for me. In the world of espionage, we call the fence straddlers double agents, working for both sides, gathering information and giving information to both sides. In the world of politics, we might call them two-faced. Of course, James in James 1:8 called them double-minded. And in Galatians 1:6-10, Paul insinuated that these fence straddlers are people pleasers. In Galatians 1:6-10, Paul writes, "I am amazed that you are so quickly deserting him who called you by the grace of Christ for a different gospel, which is really not another, only there are some who are disturbing you and want to distort the gospel of Christ. But even if we or an angel from heaven should preach to you a gospel contrary to what we have preached to you, he is be accursed. As we have said before, so I say again now, if any man is preaching to you a gospel contrary to what you received, he is to be accursed." And then Paul goes on to say, "For am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I striving to please men? If I were still trying to please men, I would not be a bondservant of Christ." There were people that were quickly abandoning the true gospel for a false gospel because they wanted to please the men and the people around them. Paul also compared fence straddlers to waves getting tossed to and fro in Ephesians 4:14. He says, "As a result, we are no longer to be children, tossed here and there by waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming." Try to play both sides and try to accept both, you're going to wind up not being respected by the one side, even though they'll be happy to use your fence straddling to their advantage. And on the other side, you're going to fall away and not be accepted by God. So here's Elijah challenging these people, and they had been for so long following the guidance of their king, who wanted them to worship these false gods that had been built up in the land of Israel. So basically what we see a lot of times throughout the Old Testament is that there are evil authority figures who rise up and mislead the people to blur the difference between truth and opinion. And Ahab was successful with his wife Jezebel in convincing the people that they could accept both gods, the true God and a false God, and helped produce fence straddlers. So sounds sort of familiar in our world today that there are people who have risen up, who have convinced people that it's okay to accept both God's teaching and the world's ways. But in the end, what they're doing is misleading people, leading them astray. Now, as far as people go, what are some reasons that, there are many reasons that somebody might become a fence straddler. But one thing that I want to point out is in this story, in 1 Kings, as we look at the progression of kings who ruled over Israel, a lot of it started with fear. I want to go to 1 Kings 12, 25 through 30. 1 Kings 12, 25 through 30. So, soon after Israel split into two kingdoms, Israel and Judah, God had a prophet come to a man named Jeroboam. And the prophet said to Jeroboam, "You are going to be made king of Israel." Now Jeroboam had to leave in fear to Egypt for a while, but then he came back and everything that the prophet had told him came true and Jeroboam was made king. And so what does Jeroboam do? Does he follow in the footsteps of David and stays on the right path of following God's will throughout his reign? No. right from the start in 1 Kings 12, verses 25 through 30. It says, "Then Jeroboam built Shechem in the hill country of Ephraim and lived there. And he went out from there and built Penuel. Jeroboam said in his heart, 'Now the kingdom will return to the house of David if this people go up to offer sacrifices in the house of the Lord at Jerusalem, then the heart of this people will return to their Lord, even to Rehoboam, king of Judah, and they will kill me and return to Rehoboam, king of Judah.' So the king consulted and made two golden calves, and he said to them, 'It is too much for you to go up to Jerusalem. Behold your gods, O Israel, that brought you up from the land of Egypt.' He set one in Bethel, and the other he put in Dan. Now this thing became a sin, for the people went to worship before the one as far as Dan." So even though he was established as king of Israel by God, God sent him a prophet and told him, this is what's going to happen, and it happened. Jeroboam, out of fear, created this problem in his mind. And the problem that he had was that his kingdom of Israel was separated apart from Judah. Jerusalem was in Judah. That's where the people went to worship God at the temple. So he thought in his mind, well, if I let the people keep going to Jerusalem to worship, they're going to abandon me and want to return and rejoin with Judah and kill me. So what does he do? He goes his own path and develops idols for the people to worship. And then from there, we see God continue to interact with Jeroboam in 1 Kings 13, 1 through 10. It says, "Now behold, there came a man of God from Judah to Bethel by the word of the Lord, while Jeroboam was standing by the altar to burn incense. And this man cried against the altar by the word of the Lord and said, 'O altar, altar, thus says the Lord, behold, a son shall be born to the house of David, Josiah by name. And on you he shall sacrifice the priests of the high places who burn incense on you, and human bones shall be burned on you.' Then he gave a sign the same day, saying, 'This is the sign which the Lord has spoken. Behold, the altar shall be split apart, and the ashes which are on it shall be poured out.' Now when the king heard the saying of the man of God, which he cried against the altar in Bethel, Jeroboam stretched out his hand from the altar, saying, 'Seize him.' But his hand, which he stretched out against him, dried up, so that he could not draw it back to himself, and the altar also was split apart, and the ashes were poured out from the altar, according to the sign which the man of God had given by the word of the Lord. So then the king said to the man of God, 'Please entreat the Lord your God and pray for me that my hand may be restored to me.' So the man of God entreated the Lord, and the king's hand was restored to him, and it became as it was before." So here's Jeroboam being challenged by a man of God. Jeroboam, a man who made his decisions based on fear of losing his power, of losing his kingdom. God causes him fear by shriveling up his hand, by splitting the altar, and Jeroboam asks the man of God, "Please ask God to heal me." So you would think at that point that Jeroboam would return to God. But that prophet who was sent to God winds up disobeying God. He's killed. And then it says later in the chapter in verse 33, after this event, Jeroboam did not return from his evil way, but again he made priests of the high places from among all the people. Any who would, he ordained to be priests of the high places. This event became sin to the house of Jeroboam, even to blot it out and destroy it from off the face of the earth. So Jeroboam, who started out by making his sinful decisions out of fear, now even when challenged and made afraid by God, he still turns back to his evil ways because it is now in his heart to do such a thing. and it is his way. So he has given in to this idea of turning to God when he's really in trouble in order to be healed, but then turning right around to worship the false gods again. We see it again in 1 Kings 14. It says that Abijah, the son of Jeroboam, became sick. And Jeroboam didn't turn to the prophets of Baal and say, "Hey, make my son better." It says that Jeroboam said to his wife, "Arise now and disguise yourself so that they will not know that you are the wife of Jeroboam, and go to Shiloh. Ahijah, the prophet, is there, who spoke concerning me that I would be king over this people." So who does Jeroboam turn to when his son is sick? Jeroboam turns to the prophet of God who told him in the first place that he would be king. So we see Jeroboam here straddling the fence. He's straddling the fence. He returns to God when he's truly in trouble and needs help. But then when things are going okay for him, he turns back to the false gods. And his people are following his pattern. So, fear. Fear is something that can start us out as becoming fence straddlers. If you don't fully trust in God to take care of your situation, if you don't rely upon God when you are fearful and think that something is not going to go right in your life, then out of fear, you might become a fence straddler and try to play both sides of both God and the world. For example, a person who fears being alone may compromise their values and do what they know is not right in God's eye in order to keep that relationship going. In some cases, as a result of that, a girl or a woman may find herself pregnant. And out of fear for the future, she follows the advice of the experts of our world, saying that the best thing for you to do is to get rid of that baby. And so, fearing for the future, she does something that she knows is not right in God's eye. And so she hopes and tries to justify that she can still follow God, but do this thing that is abhorred by God. Perhaps a parent fears doing something to harm their child, so they follow the expert's advice and ingrain evil worldly ideas into their child, because that's what the experts say for the mental health of the child, you need to do this or this that is contrary to God's will. Perhaps a person fears they will be the outcast amongst their coworkers or their classmates, so they do the immoral things the rest of the group does. So they show up as Christians on Sunday to worship, but then during the week they laugh at all the inappropriate jokes. They go along and go have a drink after work with their coworkers. Students do things that they know are against the will of God and that their parents would not be pleased with, just in order to fit in, because they fear that idea of being different or being an outcast. Of course, fear is not the only thing that causes people to be fence straddlers, hoping that they can remain Christians while doing things that are against God's will. Lusts of this life are another example that cause people to be fence straddlers. We see that throughout Ahab's life. This king who Elijah is confronting on Mount Carmel for doing so much evil, his people had to suffer for 3 years without rain through this terrible drought because Ahab led them through their sinful ways. In 1 Kings 16:29 through 34, as Ahab started out as king, it says that he became king over Israel. And Ahab, the son of Omri, did evil in the sight of the Lord more than all who were before him. It came about as though it had been a trivial thing for him to walk in the sins of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, that he married Jezebel, the daughter of Ethbaal, king of the Sidonians, and went to serve Baal and worshipped him. So he erected an altar for Baal in the house of Baal, which he built in Samaria. Ahab also made the Asherah. Thus Ahab did more to provoke the Lord God of Israel than all the kings of Israel who were before him. So here's Ahab following in the footsteps, the example set by Jeroboam, and he marries Jezebel, who encourages him to worship the false gods. And because of the lusts of life and the power that he wants, he is straddling the fence, keeping God over here on the side, but having the Israelites worship these false gods. Now we can see how much Ahab had a lust for the things of this world. If we look in 1 Kings 21, in this story in 1 Kings 21, this is where Ahab wants the vineyard of Naboth. He wants to grow a vegetable garden next to his palace, and he asks Naboth, "Can I buy this field from you?" And Naboth denied it. He said, "I'm not going to give up the inheritance of my fathers to you." And so what does Ahab do? He goes home and sulks. He pouts because he did not get what he wanted. And Jezebel conspires to have Naboth killed. And as soon as Naboth is killed, then we see that Ahab goes and takes the vineyard over. And it says in verse 25, "Surely there was no one like Ahab who sold himself to do evil in the sight of the Lord, because Jezebel, his wife, incited him. He acted very abominably in following idols, according to all that the Amorites had done, whom the Lord cast out before the sons of Israel." So in these examples of the kings of Israel, we see that they were fence straddlers. They led the people to be fence straddlers. It started out as a thing of fear for Jeroboam, and then it became a lust for the things of this world that led the kings who followed after Jeroboam to continue to do evil. There are many temptations in this world that try to lead us into fear, to be a fence straddler, to try to be both a Christian and follow the ways of the world. There are lusts of this life that try to cause us to be both followers of God and followers of the world's ways, and taking pleasure and seeking out the ways of this world. But God does not want fence straddlers. And Christianity definitely does not need fence straddlers. Like I said before, fence straddlers, they're trying to please both God and man. The men of the world are happy that there are fence straddling Christians, because then they hold the fence straddlers up as the example of what Christians are like. And they can say, "Well, why should we listen to Christians? Why should we follow Christ? See this example over here? This person is a hypocrite." So these people who are fence straddlers, trying to take pleasure in both God's will and the world, trying to please both God and man, they wind up not pleasing either. And they're definitely not respected by the world, but the world definitely holds them up as a bad example of followers of Christ. That's why in Revelations 3:15 and 16, Jesus says, "I wish that you were cold or hot, but since you are lukewarm, I am going to spit you out of my mouth." So the last thing that we want to do is be lukewarm for Christ, trying to play both sides, trying to be fence straddlers. We don't want to be the people that others say, they're the Christian who goes to church on Sunday and does whatever they want the rest of the week. It's very important for us. It's been very important throughout Christianity, but we definitely see it more now than ever, that ambivalence, taking the path of Christians saying, live and let live, saying, well, we'll just let that be. It surely won't get any worse. We see that that is not the case in this world. There's definitely not a place for fence straddlers to try to play both sides. If we are going to be committed to God and to Christ, we must be fully committed. If we are not going to be fully committed, then we might as well get off the fence and go the other way and totally disassociate ourselves and not try to wear the name Christian. Now, God demonstrated his power to the Israelites through a miracle on Mount Carmel after Elijah asked them the question, why do you keep limping back and forth between two opinions? If you're going to follow God, follow God. If you're going to follow Baal, follow Baal. But then he performed a miracle that the prophets of Baal could not perform. God performed that miracle to demonstrate his power to the people of Israel. But of course for us, God demonstrated his love for us on another hill called Golgotha. And that was followed by a miracle of the resurrection of Christ. We can't expect that there to be more miracles coming into this world to convince people. We have to demonstrate to the world that the love that God has already shown us, the miracle that God has already performed by defeating death through the resurrection of his Son, that has transformed us. That is how we convince people that Christ is the one to follow. We have to show people that we have been transformed and that we are fully committed to following Christ. So I ask you this morning, if you feel like you're straddling the fence, if you're not fully committed to God, if you still have one foot in the world, wanting to hang on to a sin in your life, or you have a fear that's holding you back from being fully committed to God, I would ask that you repent and make today the day that you commit yourself fully to God. If you have never committed yourself to Christ, then we offer you this opportunity to do so through baptism as well. So if you need to come forward, please do so while we stand and sing.